It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. We're going to talk about the Neo and the Duo, the two Microsoft's dual screen devices coming out at the end of this year. They have some interesting thoughts about that. The Bing problem continues. Microsoft has not backed down. And get ready for the LDAP apocalypse. It's all coming up next. Yeah, you do need to know about this if you use LDAP. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly. Windows Weekly is brought to you from the Twit LastPass Studios, securing every access point in your company. Doesn't have to be a challenge. LastPass unifies access and authentication to make securing your employees simple and secure. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 657, recorded Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. Bing jacked. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit. Don't forget to use the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by FreshBooks, the number one accounting software in the cloud for self-employed professionals and their teams. Improve workflow and streamline your business with FreshBooks Teams. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we talk about Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Paul Thurrott from his eponymous website.
Yep.
If I say that, do you ever say that, Paul? Like you give them your card and say, I'm
no,
from the eponymous
I'm always,
website.
I have, you know, you go into a store or wherever and they say, what's your email address? And I'm like, it's my name. And they look at you confused. And I say, it's Paul@Thurrott.com.
Then
you spell it out and they kind of raise their eyebrow. Like, really?
Is it Paul@Thurrott.AOL.com or Yahoo.com?
Yes.
I use that one a lot.
I'm not giving that one up.
Mary Jo Foley, she's all about Microsoft at allaboutmicrosoft.com. It is ZDNet blog, which means you probably have a MJFoley@ZDNet or something like that.
Nope. But I have a special email that I created for myself.
That's
no,
private.
I will not say it on the
yeah.
air.
I also do.
I'll say it. It's
Hey.
But I my publicly known email for the last 15, forever, more than 15 years, is so stupid and childish, I'm embarrassed every time I give it out. Leo@leoville.com.
Yeah. It's so what's the origin of that? I don't think that's bad.
I couldn't get leo.com. The Royal Bank of Canada snarfed that up because their mascot's Leo the Lion.
Nice.
And I couldn't get laporte.com.
Sure.
So this is back. This is like 94 or 95. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
So at the time, I thought, you know, at the time I was like, it was crl.com/TildeLaporte
right
because CRL was my in those early days my ISP.
Yeah, I had an ISP email address like that too.
Net before that something. I was 73105, 3-1
CompuServe.
Yeah.
Yep. I can,
and then I had some sort of MCI mail address. I don't remember what that was, but nothing talked to anything. So. And I, Gene. Anyway, Leoville is such an embarrassing name. I have now a more grown-up name, but I don't want to give it to anybody, just like you, Mary Jo, because it's like I don't want spammers to get it.
No, you don't.
I like an email address where you get no email.
Yeah.
I don't have that, but that would be great.
Wouldn't that be nice? It is so hard now if I want to get important email. There really is no way.
I know.
There's so much crap in my inbox. I miss email all the time, and there's just no way to filter it that I can be sure. Mm-hmm. It's just tough. But that's a first world problem.
Like a solvable problem, but it ain't.
It seems like it.
I know. Microsoft tried focused inbox, but it doesn't really work.
Well, that's why Teams, right? And
Mary Jo's historic hatred of focused inbox comes out yet again.
It doesn't solve the problem. It gives you a false sense of security.
Right. And it always puts the wrong mail in the focused inbox.
If it worked, it would be great.
First thing every time I can't stand.
But it can't possibly know what you really want. That's the problem.
This is the problem with any smart technology. This goes back to Clippy and all of these attempts to overthink what it is you're trying to do. Like it's well-intentioned and it just never seems to work properly. And if you can't trust like something like that because you want to glance and make sure nothing important happened, And then 4 hours later it goes by and, you know, and you look at the other thing, the filtered part, you're like, oh, there's the email I've been waiting for.
Yep.
That's when you turn it off. It just doesn't, you can't, totally. Can't play with that.
I would guess that anybody who's like a tech enthusiast and gets a lot of email, especially, you know, people who work in the tech business, periodically, probably every 2 or 3 years, says, gosh darn it, I'm going to fix this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Writes a lot of scripts, a
I'm
lot of
take
filters.
Take the time.
Yeah.
I'm going to go,
yeah.
I'm going to unsubscribe. I'm,
yep.
Yep.
And,
yeah, and
it
nothing, does,
it's takes
just,
months to undo it.
I like, know.
It's like trying to beat back beach erosion. You can have little victories, but yeah. It's going to get you in
it's
the end.
It's basically building a sandcastle. Man, that looks pretty. What a nice setup.
Yep. Whoosh. Yeah, exactly. Then this plus happens. I'm getting email about Frozen and Elsa.
The best, I have two filters that really have always worked. One is if there is the word unsubscribe in the body, just put that in a folder called lists, mailing lists, and never look at it. And then I don't bother trying to unsubscribe. It just as long as it's out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, yeah. That's
and then Fastmail has a filter that so I have my provider Fastmail has its own contact list, which I'm careful not to. You know, I keep it separate from my other stuff. If I want to get mail, I add that person, that email address to my contact list on Fastmail, and then I have a Fastmail rule that says that goes into a folder called important. So only people I have explicitly said they're important, they're in my contact list, get added. That works pretty good. You guys aren't in it yet, but someday.
No.
You Listen, should never put
another
us
10 years this podcast, I can at least petition you.
Yeah, it does require
to get in there.
We'll, it's kind of it's
we'll
harder
be a hearing
than,
and you know.
It's harder than becoming a saint in the Catholic Church. You have to commit a few miracles. Mm-hmm. But eventually
I almost never send you email either because I know you'll never see it because you get so much email.
Well, I would never email. I mean, it would have to be super important or something.
How would you get a hold of me?
I think I go to Lisa.
Probably get
Call
Lisa.
Wife, that's
honestly.
See, and by the way, it drives me crazy because she says, "Why do everybody thinks that I, you know, that's the way to get to you?"
Well, listen, they're right, I'm not saying Lisa's on the ball and you're not. I guess what I'm saying is,
yes, you are.
That's exactly. She
no,
reads
Lisa's
her email.
On the ball. Is all I'm saying.
She reads her email. I maybe 3-4 times a week will look at the email.
Oh maybe. Wow! Really?
Yeah.
I would never think to bother you with email. I mean, normally.
That's not a bother. I love hearing from my friends.
Well, I mean, I speak to you every week.
Don't send me, like, your joke list. You know, grandpa's joke list.
Windows support email. I was wondering if you could take a stab at it.
Hey, I got a great recipe for no-rise, no-knead bread. Would you like it? Here. All you have to do is send it to 9 friends. Do you remember that, when that went around the, what they call it, the... The
chain letters, right?
Yeah, but it was a.
But you know what?
It was worse than chain letter because you got a jar with bread in it.
Oh yeah,
Mennonite like bread or something. Yeah, and it was crap bread, by the way. It was the worst. And what
well,
you and then you had to
this trip.
Yeah, well, you had to make it.
Yeah.
And then you had to divide it up into 9 other jars.
And if you don't, you're cursed.
Yes,
for life.
It was a chain letter.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an easy one. It was one you had to actually make bread.
I would just
but I see people on Facebook who are like, I just want to see how many people are going to respond to this. Tell me something about me that I, you know, whatever. It's like, nonsense. Like, yeah, I don't know about myself or something, you know, whatever. But it's like, oh, guys, come on. Doesn't anyone else work?
By the way, I just want everybody to know I communicated with Paul and Mary Jo earlier today saying, let's pretend we're Joe Rogan and stoned and see what the show sounds like. And that's,
well, I thought you
that's
said
the experiment.
Get stoned.
What do you mean, Elon? We're just all being Elon.
This is the kind of discursive, pointless conversation I hear on most other podcasts.
I know.
Yep. But we're guys take the trouble to write a rundown. In this case, 3 times in one day, write a rundown.
We did.
Well, allegedly, because again,
you couldn't
I'm not
see
really
it.
Sure. Mary Jo's like, no, I've been working hard on this all morning. I'm surprised you can't see it.
I did.
It was basically the car.
So
and then Paul said, forget it. I'm going to the gym. Okay, well.
Screw it. I'm lifting iron.
I expect this to be solved by the time I get back.
Actually, your first item is thinking more about Neo and Duo, the new devices coming at the end of the year, which frankly, I almost every night wake up and think about them.
Do you really?
Leo, so do I.
Yeah, I really
I
want
dreamt
them.
About them this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, see? We're I obsessed did. With these. People said, why did Microsoft announce this a year ahead of time? This is why.
This is why. Actually, this is literally why. In fact, I know that Panos Panay didn't want to discuss this stuff back in October, but I think you kind of needed to have that reveal so that the SDK that they just released for the knee, for the Duo, right? Duo, sorry, the Android one, yeah. Makes sense. And you have the context for it. Because I think otherwise there would have been a little interest, of course. But I think there would have been less interest if we hadn't seen the devices.
Yeah, agree.
And we want them. And the thing is, this is opportune because they're letting Samsung, Nokia, all these people put out folding phones that are god-awful. Because they try to put the screen over it. Did you see the new Nokia that everybody, $1,500, everybody's saying, oh, this is the greatest thing, flip phone. They put out a video that says, by the way, it's normal for them there to be some bubbles and wrinkles in the screen. Well, that may be normal, but that's not what I want in a screen.
No.
I touched the light bulb yesterday and it exploded. And I have a bubble on my finger, and I can tell you it's not normal.
No, it's not normal. No. So the notion of having two non-bubbly screens with a hinge is fine with me.
You got to understand, but this is part of the transition, right? So obviously folding displays are happening, and we will have that science fiction future where we can unfold this thing and there won't be any creases and it will work great. But it's going to take a while to get there. This is going to take a while. So we're going to have dual displays, I think, first. Yeah, I think those will be more mechanically sound or whatever, or less prone to failure. And then eventually we will have reliable, decent folding displays. Probably not going to happen this year.
Somebody in the chat room says, why do we want folding displays? And I will submit this is why. We want something pocketable that has the screen real estate of an iPad or something like that, of a tablet.
Yep. Yeah. Actually, so you could extrapolate that out a little bit, because if you think about like the standard size of a smartphone, right? It's a normal smartphone. Mm-hmm. If this thing was half the height, if I could fold this thing over, that makes it's the size of a wallet.
Yeah,
right.
That's
even that Nokia. That is very interesting.
Yeah.
If you're
carrying
a computer, where maybe it's the size of a keyboard instead of the size of the full deal, and you can just kind of fold it out, you know, there's some value there. I think across the different machine types or form factor, display sizes, there's lots of different interesting things that can happen. I really would like to discuss this a little further, because I still hear back from people who are freaked when I complain about how dual screens are distracting. Like I know that I will never stop hearing from this, but here's what I'm going to say to these people. You can't beat physiology. You're wrong. Multiple screens are distracting. And you are making the same argument that no one would ever make, but anytime you see someone texting in their car when they're driving, they think like you think.
Yeah.
They think they can do this.
But Paul,
you can't.
I wasn't here for this debate, but I did see the fallout. I have three screens on my desk.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's not that I'm focused on three screens. You're right. That's silly. I mean, I'm not running a nuclear power plant, but... But I do.
Well, okay, but you have to hear the back end of the argument. So the other half of it is that the issue with dual screens on a Neo or a Duo is that they're not really dual screens. It's artificially separating the screen with a divider so that you can get something that's just a normal screen. It's not this panoramic display.
How big is that middle bezel? It should be as narrow as possible.
It's pretty dim.
Yeah, it looks like it was big.
Yeah. And but I would first gen that will change.
Be bigger.
That will make it better.
I think you have to have a hinge. I think certainly with current materials, and I know Samsung's new one is going to have a thin glass screen, but I think there's no way to really have a bending screen right now.
It will happen.
No, the whole hallmark of Surface is their hinges, right? Like that's what they pride themselves on is the hinge.
Yeah, so actually this is kind of good timing for them, because Microsoft's not ready to release a folding display device. Right. And so, they make great hinges. So neat. Maybe that will be good. There's nothing wrong with it.
There's different people. So the reason I have multiple screens is, and the same reason I want a Duo or a Neo is I have one screen that has... Like if you do video editing, you'll have a screen with the video and a screen with the controls. Mm. In my case, the chat room and messaging is one screen.
Yeah.
I have a lot of messengers open.
But you're also not flying a plane, or driving a car.
But the thing, the main screen is the one I'm working on 90% of the time.
Yeah. But I know people like using multiple displays. I'm not ragging on it per se. But
you
please
don't use them at home.
Don't believe you're not being distracted. If there's something animating over here and you're trying to focus on this, you're not focusing on this. You can't. Yeah. It's impossible. It's just the way we're built.
I think though you can use these coming devices in a lot of different, like they call them postures, right? So you can have a single image across two screens. You can have one thing on the left, one on the right that don't ever interact. They're two separate things, almost like as if you snapped two apps side by side, right? And then there's a spanning thing where you can have some of the content on this side and it can be pulled over across to the other device and enlarged or made smaller. So there's different ways you can use apps, right?
To be fair, because people will say, well, what if I want to read over here and take notes over here? That's an excellent use for two screens. It's really an excellent use for two sides of the same screen. And that's kind of my point.
Or a big screen would work. Yeah.
Right.
But you don't want to carry a big screen in your pocket, Paul.
So that's exactly right. The thing that Leo said up front, I think, is the real impetus for this. They're selling it on this other thing. But the real point of this is to get something smaller that is, if it's a form factor, something that will fit in your pocket easier. Mm-hmm. If it's a laptop style thing or whatever, it's just a smaller, hopefully lighter device or whatever that can unfold. It's not because two screens opens up the magic of productivity or whatever nonsense they were saying. There's nothing wrong with doing, note taking and, whatever. I mean, if you're a student, you can make the argument, but I think the point is simply that existing devices already solve that need. The change that's coming in these devices is what Leo said up front. It's really about the portability portability is probably the best way to say it.
But you know where that lingo comes from, right? Where they say it'll increase your productivity and all that. So they have to hire people to do these like design studies, right? They do. They have this like grand idea about the design. Like we saw with the original Surfaces, they were designed for creators, right? Remember when they first said that word and we were like, what? Right. And then I think this device is going to be targeted more for people who are prosumers, like really keyed into productivity. So they have to back that play with words, right? And they're going to be like, what? We did research and 9 people out of 10 are more productive when they use dual screens like this.
So that's better marketing than the real reason this guy would want it, which is, are you that guy that wants to flip open the phone so everyone asks you what device you have? This is for you because it's crazy looking. It's really different. Nobody wants to think they're that person, but a lot of early adopters of this kind of device are that person, right?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with productivity. It's like, man, I've been really hampered by my ability to get work done on a laptop. Thank God someone has divided the screen in half. It's like an inch thick. And now I can, unleash the magic of productivity across two displays. It's crazy.
But the other thing is they're trying to do, and they did say this in the October launch. They said, we're trying to create a new device category. And so I'm really curious, when these come out, do they market them as PCs, as tablets, as a dual screen tablet, or do they call it some new imaginary term that they come up with, right?
That's not just that's not your imagination working there. Remember they were kind of weird, Microsoft, when we referred to this thing as a phone.
Right.
So the early indication right back in October was, look, it's Android. Yes, you can make phone calls on it. It's not a phone. It's something different. They really do want it to be something different.
They do. And you know what I remembered when I had my dream this week about the Surface? Yeah, I really did dream about this. And that's bad. That means I'm obsessing over this.
You were like sleepwalking, changing the settings in OneNote so nothing would sync.
No, in my dream, I saw the Franklin Covey planner. Remember when the Courier came out and everybody was like, this is meant to be the computer version of what these planners are that people had on their desks with all the things they could write notes in and have their calendar and all that. This is that again, right? They're trying to come up with this thing that is used in a different way than a regular PC. But it's more just like, hey, if you're one of those people in the world who say, I don't really need a PC, do you carry a planner around or do you have a planner? Because if you do, we've got the device for you.
I feel like Microsoft and maybe the rest of the industry too is trying to solve a problem. I'm not sure if it was a problem, but the same problem they've been trying to solve for a long time. So back in 97, 98, whatever it was, Active Desktop came out with Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. And they had like a channel bar that would float on the desktop and you'd have this active content or whatever. The problem with that stuff was you couldn't see it because when you were using applications, they were in front of it. Mm-hmm. And so in Windows Vista and briefly in XP, if I'm not mistaken, they had this they had that sidebar thing with little gadgets or widgets, whatever the name of the things were. And they were little like a clock and little music player and all this. And this notion was you could have this stuff over on the side. They'd always be on the screen.
Actually, it's interesting this is happening right now because Monday was the 10th anniversary of the iPad, which prompted a number of articles from normally very pro-Mac folks like John Gruber, basically saying the iPad is a flop.
That really bothers me because now they're admitting what I have been saying all along, that this thing was supposed to be the bullet to the back of the head of the PC industry.
Well, maybe. But admittedly, and you read Steven Sinofsky's piece about the Windows team's reaction. Yeah, because it did shake up Microsoft to the point that they did Windows 8.
Yeah. By the way, wrongly.
Yeah.
And they've spent the last 10 years fixing that mistake.
You almost could make the argument.
That was an overreaction to something that wasn't a problem.
That Duo and Neo are kind of a continued chain reaction to the original iPad release.
The difference between the Duo and the Neo, though, right, is that they're not replacing Windows with this new thing. See, the problem with Windows 8
We've learned that lesson. We've learned that Microsoft, thank God.
You know, they went off the deep end with Windows 8. So they backtracked on that, thank God. And now they've been making other versions of Windows 10 to work on these other devices. Kind of like what they did with XP, right, with tablet PC and Media Center and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's the better approach because the core product doesn't really have to change, does it? It still works on these traditional devices.
Right. And the reason I don't think these are actually an answer to the iPad is because if they were, I think Microsoft would be trying to do Windows 8 again, right? Which would be touch first, tablet OS type thing. But it's not that. I mean, you're even going to be able to run your line of business apps in a container on these things. So they did learn that lesson that their place in the industry isn't trying to do the, low-end consumption-focused device that's like an iPad. It's something different. How different is it really? I don't know, but it's different.
We could talk for 2 hours about this. I mean, there's something really interesting about the fact that when Apple made the iPhone, they took this gigantic thing, OS X, and they turned it into something smaller and added touch and so forth. So it worked on this tiny device. And then when it came time to make this tablet, there were all these prototype images of what the Mac would look like with touch and on-screen keyboards. Mm-hmm. And they came up with this thing that was based on the iPhone. They went in the complete opposite direction. And people who kind of derided it at the time were like, well, it's just a giant iPod Touch, which, by the way, it was literally exactly that. But there's something important about that screen size. There's something that made sense, and this was a conversation I think we had with when Leah was away. But, one of the things I did appreciate, even though I didn't agree with it, all of it, was when Steve Jobs introduced the iPad, he did list out like it has to be better at these core tasks. And he went down the list. And it was in some and it wasn't in others. It doesn't really matter. But, I've said this before, and I'm not trying to be hypercritical of Microsoft, but if you go back and look at the justification they gave for the Duo and the Neo, there was none. there was literally like we're trying to invent a new form factor. Because why? Because you're being self-serving. What does this help? And then they talked about that thing that I've kind of criticized, whether you agree with it or not, that somehow dual screens open up some kind of new type of productivity or whatever. I mean, will it be better for email? Will it be better for web browsing? I think what they've done with the SDK is very interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit further in a bit, but like one of the things I'm a little worried about is this has the feel of let's just see what people come up with. I mean, maybe is there some killer app that makes this form factor make sense? If there is, Microsoft doesn't know what it is because they haven't discussed it.
I think the killer app is? My guess right now and what we've seen so far is the killer app is the launcher. It's the UI, right? The reason I say that is if you look at the mock-ups of what the launcher looks like, and it looks a lot like the next generation Android launcher. You've got all your app icons, like the most important productivity apps up at the top. underneath, you've got a list of your most recently opened documents or things that they think you would want to access first. Kind of like if you use the office.com site or the new Office app. It's like that.
Yeah, by the way, exactly right. And also that add-in for the browser. It's funny how that UI and also the all-in-one Office app on mobile, right?
Right.
That UI is kind of repeating itself. Sorry.
It is. But, yeah, and so I think that's the killer app because I think the place this device will sit is in the world of this is your productivity PC or tablet or whatever they call it.
Interesting. So
the Duo?
You know, both of them, I think, is what you're saying. Both.
So we should make this clear. The Duo is is an Android device.
Is Android, it is.
And the Neo is a Windows device.
Microsoft would like you not to worry too much about that, right?
They would.
I mean,
they're making the UI look alike on both of them, right?
Is the Duo smaller because it's a phone? Or
yeah.
But they said it's not a phone.
Leo, it's not a phone. It is not
a phone. Don't call it a phone. It is a phone. The first thing they showed you was somebody
Microsoft
answering.
Microsoft Legal's on the phone. Oh, they're not on the phone. They're on the Duo.
They're on the Duo. Duo me.
You Duo me.
Duo over. Yeah.
Anyway, look, when the Microsoft launcher first came out, there was a little bit of pushback from the Windows Phone fan guys, right? Because, you know, it wasn't live tiles. It didn't have all those kind of cool features that everyone loved from Windows Phone. But the argument I made at the time was you need to give this a little bit of effort and look at this because this represents Microsoft's current thinking on mobile user experiences. And I would say that I think it was a week or two ago I talked about a preview version of the next version of the launcher, which I believe is this thing that Mary Jo is describing, and a way to get it today on your phone. And take a look at where Microsoft is thinking now. And I think this is what she said, I think is absolutely correct. This is the 2020 version of where Microsoft thinks mobile and we'll say web UX should be, you know, and is their plan for UX kind of across the board.
Right. Right. Because if you think of these, again, as what's their purpose in life? It's to make you more productive and more organized. What's the best way to do that? Put your documents and your people and the things that you are most likely to access first, right front and center in the UI, right? Instead of having to search around.
It sounds like you're talking about Windows Phone, by the way. If you think about what you just said, it sounds very much like that. It's a different.
Except it looks so different from that, but
it looks different.
But the idea is that, right? It's like the people, the documents, and the apps that are most important to you are right there, right?
This came to mind when we first talked about Windows Phone when it was first coming out. It's funny because it's coming to mind now. But if you go back to Windows 95 and the document-centric interface, one of the things that Microsoft experimented with at the time, which was going to be the future of UI back then, was this notion of you don't have to think like, I need to find words somewhere in the menu.
Right.
You're like, I just want to make a new document. And there was a thing for that right at the top of the start menu. Mm-hmm. And it was a document-centric thing, you know?
Yeah.
And that thinking has kind of evolved over the years. I want to communicate with Mary Jo. Do I need to worry about finding the particular app that is the way that her and I communicate? Or do I just go to her, you know, in my menu or whatever? So it's funny. They're still kind
thinking
of working
like that.
They are.
Yep.
It's the same thinking.
It is. And it's not bad. I've been using lately to access my apps. I've been going to office.com, signing in with my Office 365 account, and everything I want is right there. Like the thing I was just working on or the thing I sent you through Skype, it's right there. I don't have to figure out like, where is that again? Is it an email attachment? Did I send it in Skype? Everything that you just used is there.
This is this is semi-profound because for old guys like me, who are very set in their ways and have a very particular workflow. And I have a many years long developed way of doing things in my case, through the File Explorer in Windows. Mm. And I sync certain folders from OneDrive and I manage things a certain way. You know, one of the trouble, like for example, when I was experimenting with Chromebooks, which are web-based, obviously, one of the problems I had was, well, I don't have that integration with the file system. How do I, and what you're describing is how you do interact with that stuff. You can use an extension that works in the browser. You can just go to that site, like you said. Mm-hmm. If you're using the Microsoft Launcher on these devices or on your phone today, you basically get that view right in the UI. It's hard for me because I'm so set in my ways.
I know. You don't think that way, right?
I don't. It's like the difference between use, like, you know, I pin apps to my taskbar. A lot of other people would access those same web apps in tabs in a single browser window. Mm. We're doing the same thing.
Right.
We're just doing it a different way. Mm. If that makes sense. We're getting to the same place in a different way.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. It's. I'm not saying it's better or worse. It's just different. And because I'm so set in my ways, it's hard for me to switch, you know, to change.
Yeah.
But it's probably not hard for other people. for younger people.
I mean, so, you know. Right. So here's another thing that I've been thinking about with these devices. Who are these for, right? Are they for people who, you know, we know a lot of these people. People who say, I don't need a PC. Are they for people or animals? No. Are they?
You know how Mary Jo feels about people.
No, what I mean is, are they for all these people we increasingly are running into who say, I don't really need a PC anymore.
Right.
And if it is for those people, maybe changing up the way you work is okay because they don't have all these ingrained workflows like we have.
Let me run something by you that we were talking about yesterday. It's pretty clear, maybe you'll agree with this, that the trend in the computer industry is moving computing power to the edge, away from a centralized computer, mm-hmm. even from a desktop or a laptop, to mm-hmm. a variety of devices, your phone, your Amazon Echo, your television, that's where the computing power is going. And I, you know, this is kind of part of that post-PC era thinking. Mm-hmm. Putting more computing power in an edge device, for a lot of people, it's the same reason young people don't have a home phone.
Right.
They don't need one.
Yep.
So if you have more computing in a edge device that's like your phone that you could carry with you, maybe you mm-hmm. don't need a desktop or a laptop.
Right.
You're writers. You guys are a bad example because you need a keyboard.
Yeah, no, we are very niche-y. In our needs, for sure.
But normal people probably are satisfied with their phone. I mean, for years in Japan, the phones were more powerful. People just didn't buy computers.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Or as smartphones are coming to places in the world that never had computers, those people don't have any need for a computer. They don't feel like mm-hmm. they do everything on the phone. I feel like that smart edge thing requires smart cloud, too. I mean, and there's
guess what business Microsoft's in.
Yeah, by the way.
Right. Well, no, I mean, for example, like one of the things that makes all those edge devices powerful is when you have like a centralized storage server.
Your data is common data, right?
Yeah.
That's why we can do
it. So, like, I think you need both of those. I also,
Microsoft's business. So it would make sense for them to get smarter edge.
Yeah.
You know, they don't need to sell computers anymore, maybe.
Mm-hmm. This conversation is probably repeated across different types of products. I mean, think about Microsoft Teams, where I would kind of say the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's not really for me, but I sort of get how other people would find this to be very productive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you were complaining about email. This is why people have fled to Slack, Teams, and other tools.
No, I get
it. Because email
doesn't
work.
It's more like the devil, you know, but I for sure. Yeah. I'm not belittling Teams or anything like that. It's an incredible tool, but I mean, I don't look. It's over for me, folks. This is what I'm
saying.
You're
almost dead.
Forget about me.
You're the old
go on
school.
Without me.
He's stuck in Amiga.
Your chat apps and your folding screen non phones. You're all going to be good.
No, remember,
I'll be here with my desktop PC from Packard Bell, 1996.
Mm-hmm. Your TI Windows calculator. 8.
Or Windows 98 or whatever the hell it was. Yeah.
I think it makes sense if you know your core business is cloud to make smart edge devices and they're not going to stop making Surface tablets and laptops, but that's where it seems to be moving. And I think that, you know, the other thing is there's an imperative on every company to find the next thing.
It's,
you don't want to just coast on what you do. You can't.
Yep, totally.
Doesn't mean the Neo and Duo are going to succeed, but it means they need to try stuff.
Yeah.
The one thing, by the way, another aspect of this thing that I think is super important, if you look at what Microsoft did and is doing with Chromium, mm-hmm. I think they have an opportunity here to do something similar with Android. They talked about this partnership that they have with Google. It's no more a partnership than anyone who buys an AOSP gets or whatever, but they have a seat at the table, and they maybe through this SDK and through other work they might do with Google, they can influence the actual platform, and that Android 11, I think it is, it's coming out this coming year, might have some input from Microsoft as one of the companies that's making these types of devices. I think, you know, Samsung and whoever else is doing this, I'm sure have also had input on how Android evolves. And so I think it's important from that perspective as well, because even though Microsoft doesn't necessarily own the platform, whether you're talking about Chromium or Android, they might still, in this case, have some influence over it, which would be interesting.
So like I like your thinking there, because I think what we have to think about is Microsoft isn't just designing Surface in a vacuum. The Surface team, when they build something, they sit down at the table with the people who do Office 365, the people who do Intune, the people who do MSN and Bing and Edge, and they say, all right, we're going to build this thing. Here's this dual screen thing. What do you have, other teams, that would work with this thing?
Well, that's, by the way, that's true. That's huge. Right? And if you think about Microsoft 365, the core part of that being Office 365, you know, Neo or Duo, those things are both great devices for that platform. And, you know, I know one of them doesn't have Windows on it, but Windows is only really part of Microsoft 365. And as far as productivity goes and meeting people where they are and so forth, I mean, they can, you know, they're still going to make a device. There will, we'll see what happens this year. Will there be third party devices that ship with the Microsoft launcher? Right. Wouldn't that be interesting?
That would be. That would be. I was thinking about collections. You know, that feature, neither of us really thought it was a big deal, the thing they added to Edge so you can do shopping and compare, you know, if you're cutting and pasting websites, comparing them in one place and having them all accessible. But on this kind of a device, collections makes a lot more sense, right? Because it's a device for organizing and keeping your things, your personal set of things that you want to have readily accessible all in one place. So maybe they built collections because of this, right?
Speaking of working with Google, I don't know if you saw this morning, or actually it was yesterday afternoon's article in The Information, Google developing new unified communications app for businesses.
Yeah.
Going right finally, after Teams, right? Yeah, finally.
It includes functionality by their sixth attempt, they're probably going to get it right.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
It includes Hangouts Meet functionality, Google Video Conferencing, Hangouts Chat. It includes Drive. It includes Gmail.
So it's just like Slack and Teams, basically.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think that's the point of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that they're necessarily going to be a tough competitor in that space, but it's...
I given the fact that they have G Suite, they
we use G Suite almost, here, so that would be
they have to have something like this, right?
Incentive,
they're either going to buy Slack, which you know they looked at,
right,
and maybe even attempt it, or they're going to have to do what Microsoft did, and well, they could buy a competitor, I guess, or build their own. So it makes sense that they would do something like this.
Mm-hmm. You said there is a SDK for Mac developers for Duo. That's crazy.
Yep, just came out.
What does that mean? Who are they? What is?
Well, because so remember, Duo is Android. So what the SDK is an add-on for Android Studio. So the original release was for Android Studio on Windows only, but now it works on Mac or Linux because Android Studio is available on those platforms as well.
Mm-hmm. So the idea is that Mac developers would write for Duo.
Well, Android developers using Macs.
Android developers using Macs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which are probably a lot. Yeah. The other thing there is, you know, last week, I think that SDK actually shipped a week ago today on Wednesday, I think. Mm-hmm. So we would have mentioned it last week.
We did. We mentioned it.
I didn't think, you know, I was like, well, you know, look, this isn't something I need to jump on tonight. You know, it's complicated. If you've ever used Android Studio, you know, it's a tangled mess. But I was surprised the next morning as some other blogs had published little hands-on things with the emulator. I was like, wow, I'm actually kind of surprised these guys got this thing up and running. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at it and I realized, oh, it's really easy to get this thing up and running. Like literally all you have to do is you have to install Android Studio because it does rely on the emulator provided by that environment. But the Microsoft SDK or the Microsoft emulator installs, it's just an EXE. So you just run it, you install it, and you can run it off the desktop. And it relies on Android Studio being on the computer, but you don't have to develop an app or anything to use it. It just runs. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of stealthy. I mean, this is very interesting. And tied to what we talked about at the beginning of the show, this is why Microsoft announced this thing back in October. they literally intended for people like you and I and bloggers, you know, other influencer types or whatever, to run this thing and be able to use this successfully and get excited about it. And I, anyone who listens to this show, I think probably has the technical acumen to do this. It's not complicated. Yes, you have to put this hairy Android Studio thing on your computer, but you can bring this emulator up in a window. You can rotate it. You can install apps on it, but you can sign in with your accounts if you want to, in Edge, for example, and see what it looks like and enjoy that white bar in the middle. It'll make it super productive.
Can you use any development tools with it too? Like, I know you can use Xamarin on Duo, right?
No, I think those are the two right now. And Xamarin, I'm sure, relies on... I've not gotten to Xamarin myself, so I shouldn't assume, but
Xamarin's out there advertising you can use us for Duo.
You can. That is true. Yeah. But the emulator that Microsoft made was for the Android Studio.
Yeah.
You know, emulator environment. So possible. I don't know if Xamarin uses that on mobile or not. I assume they must.
It might be premature to ask, but do you think developers are taking to these platforms? I mean, Microsoft needs to get not just users. In fact, before they get users, they got to get people to write software for it, right?
I mean, so that's a concern because why? You know, I suppose the key here is going to be you not so much like I have a great new idea for a dual screen app,
right?
It's more like I have an app.
Should I make it dual screen?
Exactly.
What can I? How hard is it to tailor this thing to make it? You know,
and maybe
really
you
neat
don't have to. I mean, maybe it just occupies one screen, and that's fine.
Well, that's one thing.
They
that's
say
one
that,
thing
right?
Would do.
Yeah. Right. They say if you have an app, it'll work in one screen. Yep. Like you don't have to do anything, and it will work on these. But if you really want to make it jazzy and be able to span and all that, then you have to do a few things.
Well, I'll give you an example. Well, there are a lot of calculator apps that have a paper tape because that's a nice thing to see the history of your calc. Yeah, right. Left side calculator, right side paper tape is a natural.
That's nice too because those screens have the shape of those things.
Yeah,
it's very, so it kind of makes sense.
And if that's an easy thing to do, I bet you anybody who has a calculator with a paper tape would do it.
The nice thing about this is it's not something brand new. It's not some weird Microsoft environment, some Microsoft language, some Microsoft framework. Well, it's a Microsoft framework, but it literally is designed to work with the tools Android developers are already using. And you could do nothing, like we said, or you can, I don't know what you would have to do, but if you want to separate, you know, have different screens and whatever those things are, that's the trick is how hard is that? But however hard it is, it's still way better than, well, if you want to work on this, you have to do this new thing.
Yeah.
I think one of the things they did was really smart. They just they built it to work with the thing that everyone's using. And then when the Windows one comes out, it will be the same thing. You can choose between, using Visual Studio, it's going to be Win32, which should span WinForms and WPF, UWP, or PWA.
Yep.
So those things should work, you know, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And if you go to docs.microsoft.com right now and you search for Surface Duo specs, I mean, they've got code samples. They've got everything. Oh, they've got the APIs up there. Like so a lot of stuff's there.
Actively pursuing.
They are.
Developers.
In fact, it's so there, I'm a little surprised they didn't discuss the developer story back in October. They didn't just come up with this 2 weeks ago.
No.
You know, they were working on this.
Yeah, I think they started talking to developers right after that hardware announcement, like privately, and said, "What do you need from us? Like, what do you want to hear? What do you want to see?" And then they I'm sure already were quite well on the way with the APIs and all that.
There's a web developer angle to this as well, and they're working with web standards to get there to be some kind of support for these dual screen devices. And I would imagine there are popular third-party frameworks like Flutter, which is cross-platform. It will be interesting, and this is where the Google part comes in, whether they can get the makers of those things to support this type of device formally as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but right now it's the micro. You know, you have to use the Microsoft SDK in Android Studio.
Right. So February 11th, if you're a developer and you care about this, you want to tune in to the Microsoft 365 Developer Day event that's going to be online. Yeah. And then I'm curious what else they're going to say at Build, right? Because Build is in late May. And you would think they'd talk more about this there as well.
I would assume there would be a little bit about Surface Neo and dual screen Windows, I guess we'll call it 10X development, even on that day long event.
Me too.
And and I'm sure, well, I shouldn't be, I'm not sure, but I would imagine we're going to see an SDK before build as well. It seems like with that device coming out this fall, they're going to want developers to get going on that.
I think they were hinting it might be out by February 11th.
That makes sense. Right.
We shouldn't say for sure, but it seemed like that's where they're going.
Earlier rather than later. Like, they're not going to wait till build for something like that. It's too important.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot going on there. Like, I think as tech bloggers, we a lot of times just get overly focused on like, ooh, it's so cute. It's here. It's small. It's got two screens. But then you got to think about all these other things, like what apps are going to ship on it.
Right.
You know, what services is it going to connect to? I really like Leo's idea about edge device, because remember last week you were talking about how Satya recently said something about, you know, should we rename Windows Edge or something? And it's like they're thinking about this too.
Azure Edge.
Right. Like, what if they call these Azure Edge devices? Internally from a developer.
Well, they do call them Edge devices, Intelligent Edge devices, right? That's the name.
Yeah.
I mean, Windows. The PC is kind of a specialized tool when you think about it. It is.
We all love it, but that's not the world.
Right.
That's us.
Leo, it is my world.
I know, it is. I have a deep-rooted, long-standing fondness for desktop computing. But, it's
like horses.
my son, who was doing sales for Twit until last month, when he took off he bought a one-way ticket to Asia.
Wow.
And he said, I'll come back. I'm coming back when I'm done.
That's rather vague.
Yeah. but he wanted to continue to do sales from Asia, you know, which he could sort of do.
Yeah.
But you need to access a tool that we have that tells you what the availabilities are and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And at first he was going to take his $3,000 MacBook, and I said, you know, it'll get stolen, guarantee you, so don't.
Yeah.
I said, what if you, in something lighter, take an iPad, a keyboard. You could probably, and we set it up, and he said, yeah, I guess I can do it. But he got there, and it wasn't quite fast enough or powerful enough. So he ended up buying a cheap Acer Swift laptop, like a few $100 in Vietnam, and is using that. So he still needs to carry a computer with him.
Right. Yeah.
Even though he has ubiquitous internet, that's the good news. So he can get online. He can make phone calls. He can do a lot of that. But he, for some, you know, I guess because of the heavy duty tool that we're providing, he needs a computer. But I wonder how that's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
That would require, though, a lot of line of business apps to become lighter weight, become edge apps. Well,
in a container, right? That's another way you could do it.
I've sort of felt for years that something like a Chromebook would solve the need for a lot of people who occasionally needed that big screen, real keyboard, whatever. And it doesn't seem like those have taken off in any appreciable way outside of education, which, of course, is driven by, you know, the cost and so forth.
Yeah, my daughter uses a Chromebook. She doesn't. She used it all through college. She doesn't need anything more than a Chromebook.
I find it so limiting, personally, and I tried.
Here's a funny thing. She wanted to apply for a PR job, and one of the requirements was to make a PowerPoint presentation.
And I told you this story sometime in the past year. Someone mentioned PowerPoint to my daughter, and she said, "What's PowerPoint?"
Right. So to her credit, Abby knows, she's 28. She knows what PowerPoint is.
Yeah.
And did it, but she had to borrow a Windows laptop to do it.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So I guess you could do PowerPoint in the cloud.
You could do PowerPoint online, but
I think she wanted to do it.
But I mean, who knows what you'd be missing? That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not clear how those things line up.
Mm-hmm.
So business will keep using it and you know how long it takes to get rid of that line of business software. It just stays and stays and stays.
Yeah.
I think end home users, probably that time is gone now where you have to have a desktop computer. Or people still want to buy laptops. I mean, they call a radio show all the time saying, I need to get a laptop.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
And you say, yeah, you do.
Yeah. Buy 10. The industry needs your help.
Yep. Well,
I did recommend, because of you, Mary Jo, a Surface laptop last weekend.
Yeah, I don't think the person would be mad if they had the laptop 3.
No, that's a beautiful computer.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to say about Neo and Duo, and then before we take a break? Because next we're going to talk about the hot topic of Bing.
Yeah,
but you're going to see why we're talking about it.
Bing's back, yeah,
you'll
baby.
Enjoy the controversy.
I like my Bing wallpaper. My Bing picture.
Yeah, that's really pretty.
Yeah. It's always nice.
That's actually one of the nicest things about the Microsoft launcher, right? You get that different wallpaper every day.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yep.
I'm using it on Linux, but that's, okay. You know, today
of course
we
you
have
are.
A nature park in Guatemala. It's quite beautiful. It's my favorite wallpaper. When you do, though, in Linux, you don't get all the little Bing links that you can click inside the Bing picture.
Yeah.
Which, frankly, is a benefit.
You get something like that in Windows 10, too. I booted up the computer today, and there was a picture of Mars on the, on the lock screen. That was
the
really
lock
nice.
Screen. I have Bing wallpaper on the lock screen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, let me tell you, for people who are in the business of protecting their company and their networks, about a really clever idea. You've heard us talk about honeypots for years. In fact, I think the very first or second Security Now was about honeypots. The idea is, you put something on your network that looks valuable and doesn't look vulnerable, looks valuable, looks like something like payroll information or social security numbers. But you give it a name that makes it look like, and then you watch and see if it gets attacked. That's one way, probably the best way to find out if there's a hacker on your network browsing around. I have a very easy way to make honeypots, to put them on your network, very affordable, very powerful. It's called The Canary. We use one here. It comes from Thinkst. In fact, you can find out more at canary.tools/twit. So let me just show you the interface to our Canary. We have a Canary sitting right next to me. The nice thing about the Canary is it's sitting on the network, but it can be anything you want. In this case, it looks like a Synology NAS. You know, and then I also, look, somebody scanned the port on the backup NAS. So that's an incident. Now, this was an older incident, but it was an interesting case, actually. That was back in August. What was scanning it? And then I saw, and then the IP address was a local IP address, even more scary. In fact, there's 14 incidents. By the way, I love this feature of the Canary. It rolls up the incidents into a single actionable report, so you don't get thousands of pings, which just tempts you to, ignore it. Russell, who also is on the Canary and is our IT manager, immediately figured it out. He went and looked at what's on that port. It was another desktop NAS device that was scanning our network. We immediately disconnected it. I don't know why it thought it was a good idea to do that, but it was really great to get that information. Now, the nice thing is this is set up to look like a Synology, but I can configure it, and you see I've turned on FTP, the login on a web server, and SSH. The reason you do that, I want to know, when people log in, I get a notification, this is the login, this is the name they use and the password. That's really valuable. When you get a honeypot alert that says they use this person's name to log in, that tells you a lot about what the hacker knows, the advanced persistent threat. You can make these canaries be anything you want, anything from a Windows share to, let's see, here's the device personality, and you pick one. Windows Server 2012, Windows Server 2000. You can make it an XP desktop. See, it'd be smart to make it a file share on Windows XP. They'd go, these idiots, they just left a Windows XP on the network. IIS, Linux, I have a Synology NAS, VMware, HP, ILO server, you could have a Joomla server, cups, you could even have a SCADA device. You could have a Siemens SCADA device on there. And the thing is, you know in your business what you want it to be. You could choose the Mac prefix. It can be, in this case, of course, I'm going to make it Synology, but you can make it a Mac that is absolutely looks like a device from those manufacturers. You can turn on a Christmas tree of services. You could say what the file shares are. This is a fantastic tool, and it really is a great way to find out if there's somebody on your network. Ideally, you never hear from your canary. You see, I also have some canary tokens. Once you have a canary, you can put unlimited tokens. Those are files sitting anywhere on the network, on hard drives, in your boss's office, or anywhere, that are, again, attractive and will ping you the minute somebody tries to open. This is a PDF with the title Payroll Information. As soon as somebody tries to open that, I'm going to get a notification. Somebody tried to open your Canary. Oh, that's awesome. It'll look like anything you wanted. It's, by the way, it's just a little thing. It's sitting right on my desk here. I'll show you. This is, it's like a, it's like a little IoT device or something, but it's not. It's actually a very sophisticated network device. It can look like a router, a switch, a NAS server, anything you want. The company behind this has been in the security game for 2 decades. They've trained companies, militaries, governments on how to break into networks. They use what they know about how hackers behave to create these canaries. They're deployed all over the world in some of the biggest companies and the smallest companies. Every company you've heard of. In fact, if you go to canary.tools/love, you can see all the tweets from CISOs, you know, from CIOs, from IT guys about how much they love their canary. All 7 continents. That means there's one on Antarctica, or 2 or 3. And they're very affordable. You get as many canaries as you want. You're not really buying the canaries. In fact, that's nice because you get upgrade support and maintenance. And if something happens to your canary during the year, they just send you a new one, no questions asked. Sample pricing, we have 5 canaries, $7,500 bucks a year. That includes the console, the upgrades, the support, the maintenance. I have to say, though, if you use the word TWIT, T-W-I-T, in the How Did You Hear About Us box, you're going to get 10% off, and not just for the first year, but forever. So that's a big savings. We know you'll love the things to Canary. You'll want to put them all over the network. Some big banks have hundreds, small companies, just a few. There is a 2-month money-back guarantee, 2 months. So you can really give it a try and see if you like it. On average, it takes companies 191 days to realize somebody's in their network. How long did it take Marriott to figure out the SPG logins had been hacked and there were people? 5 years somebody was wandering around that network. Sony, 7 months. So this is why you need a canary. It's a honeypot that's easy to set up, powerful. You won't, once you start using one, you won't ever want to stop. We don't, certainly. Canary.tools/twit. Again, use the word twit to get 10% off for life. Back to the show. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about Windows. Let's move on to the most important product in Microsoft's portfolio. Today they're going to announce
what? A new segment we're going to have on the show called the Bing Controversy of the Week.
The Bing Controversy of the Week. Nice. I'm going to Bing the bong for that one. That's a good one.
Bing the bong.
Bing the bong. Oh, my bong's not working. It broke.
You Bing bongers.
There's nothing worse than a broken bong.
Is bong the past tense of Bing?
Yeah, I bonged.
I bonged.
What have you bonged?
What have you bonged
what
today?
What hath God bonged? What is going on with Bing that it would be a story?
Okay. So, you know the way we just talked about Neo and Duo, and there's more to it than just a pretty piece of hardware. Yeah. There's more to Bing than just a second-tier search engine, right? Microsoft's doing a lot of changes to Bing that I don't think people understand thoroughly. So Bing is going to stay a web search engine, as far as we know. It's an okay web search engine. It's definitely, for me, not yielding results that are as good as Google, especially on mobile and local devices for me. But Microsoft is changing Bing into more of an intranet web search engine. And I don't think people get that. When they announced at Ignite a couple years ago that they were changing how they're handling search to make search more universal across Windows and Office, the other place it's universal now is Bing. So if you're signed into your Microsoft account and you use Bing as your search engine, you get results that look totally different than just a regular web search engine. Like when you search for a document, your documents in your company come up, right?
So I think, is this Microsoft account or is it like an Azure Active Directory account?
I think it's a work account,
isn't it? I think it's Microsoft.
Is it a work account only? You might be right.
I don't think it's Microsoft account, but anyway.
So it's your Microsoft work account.
But now I'm curious.
Okay, yeah. Try it with the other one too. But the idea they're trying to get to is Bing is a productivity tool. And just like Surface Neo and Duo are productivity tools, they're trying to make the case if you use Bing and sign into your Microsoft, well, I won't say Microsoft account, your work account through Microsoft, that you will get much more interesting results and relevant results. You'll get your documents, your people, all the things we just talked about being on Surface Neo and Duo, right? So I think these two things are very much aligned. And I don't think people quite understand what we mean when we say Bing for Business or Microsoft Search and Bing. Like, you just are like, yeah, it's still Bing. It's not. It's a really, really different experience. Just try it sometime and you'll see how different the results are when you do this. It's crawling basically your local machine. And if you're connected with an Active Directory and the permissions are allowed, it's crawling your internal company directory too. So this is huge. And I don't think people get how huge this is. It's also the reason Microsoft did that really bad thing last week. And they said, we're going to be hijacking Chrome browsers.
I keep expecting them to retract that. And they haven't.
They have not. I went back at them today and I said, no. Does it work?
So it only works with my Active Directory. Like my,
okay.
No, yeah. And it is your different. It is in there. Like the Microsoft search results.
Yep.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, right? So, but what they did last week is still terrible. They said, if you're an Office 365 Pro Plus user starting in February in certain countries, we're going to just forcibly install an extension to your Chrome browser that has Microsoft Search and Bing, and it's going to switch your search engine. And I went back to them this week and I said, I don't know if you've looked at the count of how many people are fighting you on this on User Voice and on GitHub.
That's crazy.
Right. But like, people think this is terrible. People are blocking them now because they're in anticipation of this happening. Somebody even entered this, the new Office 365 Pro Plus extension with Bing in the Wikipedia directory of hijacking browsers.
Yep. Right. Yeah, right. Well, but it is
right.
It's, I mean, it is. It is.
Here's the real problem. It's funny because the people who are outraged are users. The people who should be outraged are IT administrators. Why on earth is Microsoft bypassing them to install this thing on their users' computers? Now, I'm sure there are group policies, yada, yada,
there
yada.
Are. They can, you can block
whatever,
it.
But, yeah. But this is a strange end run.
Shouldn't be opt-out. It should be opt-in.
I agree. Mean,
yes, and it's actually not strictly necessary. If you go to Bing.com and search, I just did it. It works fine. You don't need a browser add-in.
Yeah. They're trying to expose more people to search. This is why they're doing it. This new intranet search in Bing. This is the reason they're hijacking the browser.
Well, in other words, you go to the address bar and you search for something. Now it will come up because this thing made Bing the default browser. I assume that's why. But
that is why. Yep. Yeah. So it's a really overly heavy-handed way to try to get people to say, hey, look at this cool thing we're doing at Bing. This isn't going to work, guys. It's going to backfire, but they're not backing down so far. I rechecked today.
I expected to hear before today that they were going to rethink this, and there's been nothing.
Too. No, I keep asking. I've asked about three times so far. Like, are you guys really going to stick with this and not make it opt-out?
This is a tough one because, you know, this speaks to the moral authority problem that they no longer have if they do stuff like this. You know,
I know.
People will remember this. They may not remember the details, even though it never impacted any of them. And and they don't really understand what it's doing. And they're going to say we were Bing-jacked. Yeah. And it's
even though what they have is an Office 365 home account that they and they're using Edge anyway.
It doesn't matter because the reputation damage.
Yep.
I know.
Stupid.
It's really bad. It's terrible. Yeah. I just am really surprised they're sticking with it. But the reason they are is I don't think, again, people understand how much they are willing to do to push this new vision of search.
By the way, the search thing is cool. It's really
cool.
Nice. It's a great feature. And
it is.
Doing this is wrong.
It is. Too bad. I agree. You know when I had a clue that they were really going to do something different with search was when Yusuf Mehdi's title changed. This was right around the time of Ignite. Yep. He was corporate vice president of Modern Life and Devices. So Modern Life is all this prosumer stuff they're doing. Then they added into his title search. So now he's corporate vice president of Modern Life, Search and Devices. Like, this is very core to their mission here.
Yeah. I wonder, we were talking earlier about, and Mary Jo mentioned the office.com experience that you get up on the web and the Office app on wherever and how it's kind of the same view. I talked about the extension and so forth. Mm-hmm. It's not hard to imagine this thing being extended to consumers where you can search for Bing, and you worked on a document called whatever it was called, and you type that into the Bing search thing, and what comes up is your document.
I mean, that already happens to you in Windows 10, right? If you use the search engine.
Yes, but I mean
there.
Right from the browser, right? It's kind of a – because people spend a lot of time in the browser. Like, it's kind of a neat thing to put search where people search. You know, Microsoft spent so much time trying to get internet search into the start menu. Mm-hmm. Even when you think about it, it almost makes more sense to put file search, you know, OneDrive search, whatever you want to call it, into the web browser, because I bet more people go there to look stuff up. Why not go to where people are going?
Yep. But the way they're doing it, not a good way.
maybe Google will integrate it into their search engine. Sorry.
But how much do you bet this is somehow tightly integrated into Duo and Neo? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, when you control the launcher or the operating system, whatever. Of course.
Yep. I mean, it's already hard to switch your search engine in Windows 10, when you're using Credge, right? But
yes, right.
They it's do tricky make that to find it.
But you can do
it.
You can do it.
Could see, you can. Yeah. And I think legally they have to let you do it, but they can make it hard to find. So if you buy one of these devices, you're unlikely as a normal user to switch it.
Right, right, right. And right. So, I mean, even, I don't know how this would work exactly, but I'm sure if you went into the Android settings interface and you change your default search engine to Google, which a lot of people would, if you're using the Microsoft launcher and you're doing search from that search bar there, you're still going to get Bing.
Yeah,
just
you
like
do.
If you're using Edge and you change the search engine to Google, if you do a search off of that default new tab page, it's still going to go to Bing. It doesn't matter what
that's for. Every time I use Bing by accident or whatever, I know it's Bing. It's not as good as Google.
Right.
So it's not like if it were just as good as Google, or better. You could even be better than Google.
Oh, the tip would be switch to this, but
then it wouldn't be a big deal because I would be improving things.
But one of the ways they can make it so, first of all, if you're using Bing, you have no idea that it's any worse, right? I mean, if you just use Bing, you wouldn't know anyway. But more to the point, you could make the argument that we'll call it OneDrive search, I guess, for lack of a better term, file search. If they integrate that into Bing, I mean, if that's one of the things you're searching for a lot, it does it makes it better in that way. I mean, it's one of the way, you know, because Bing does, obviously Bing has certain things that it does well, but, this is just a neat, I think this is a neat feature. I mean, if you use, a web browser for, you know, productivity purposes or whatever, if you're storing your stuff up in, if you're an Office 365 Pro Plus customer up in OneDrive for Business or SharePoint or whatever, or if in the future, I guess, with Duo and Neo and maybe just with Credge in general, OneDrive, being able to search that stuff from the web or search for that's actually pretty powerful.
It's Should I switch to Bing for all my searches?
No, Leo. God, no. Okay. Stop.
So, you know, so two things about why the results aren't, quote, as good for us. One is, your results get better the more you use a search engine. It gets more tailored to you, right? Okay. And the more people who do a search in a search engine.
How do we know that's true?
Yeah, no one uses it that much.
Everything's about machine learning these days, right? Yeah. Sure. But also, the more people use a search engine, the results get better, right? Because it's a larger pool of people searching something.
And so the results are bigger. I mean, that's something to look into. You get earned points for using Bing, and you can use those points to buy things like Xbox Live Gold passes and Amazon gift cards and whatever. Does Google pay you to use them?
Well, there's an opportunity, honestly. I think a lot of people would stop using Google. There's certainly a movement among the people I know to DuckDuckGo and StartPage and other non-Google-y searches. If Bing were, you know, if you felt like the results from Bing were as high quality as Google, minus the Google ads and all
that. So, by the way, all three of us in the next 72 hours are going to hear from people who will insist that Bing is just as good, if not better, than Google. You know, and so people have different experiences.
Well, I'm going to, as an experiment, I will switch everything to Bing this week.
I've tried this. I mean, look, I've tried too.
Yeah. You know what? There are things it's really good for. If you're like me and you do a lot of searches for Microsoft orgs and plans and product announcements. It's of course it's great for that.
Yeah, like,
it's awesome for that.
but you know where it's really bad
in New York. In New York, when I have it on my phone, like a lot of times still, even now, all these years later, if I search for a restaurant or a place, a lot of times the info is out of date. Like a new place that's open, it's not listed, or the hours are wrong, and they're not wrong in Google. So there is a tangible difference for me in local searches using my phone. There is.
I mean, if you're looking for photos of supermodels, it's pretty good.
Or so other things.
There's that. Yeah. I remember having this conversation with Microsoft years ago now where they were saying, you know, they look at the types of things people are searching for. And for some reason, celebrity stuff was a big deal. So they're like, well, we'll tailor this thing for celebrities. Yeah. So if you're looking for celebrities, you get these nice pages with, you know, nice layouts and everything. And it's like, okay, but what if I'm just trying to get stuff done here? Like, you know, that's nice. I mean, I know that's a use.
You know, they're trying to make it not just celebrities have nice pages. Like they did one for me. I don't know why they did one for me.
Oh, what's your Bing page?
No, just type into Bing, Mary Jo Foley, and you'll see what they did for me. It's kind of cool. Like my whole bio comes up on the right and my affiliations, my Twitter handle, like all this stuff gets organized for me automatically.
Nice. So why? So
I'm sure they did one for you, Leo. Like they're doing them just to try to get more like the results to surface.
Because I signed into my organization, I learned that Paul Throt is an administrator. And here's his email address, and I can chat with him.
Oh, really? Wow.
Mm-hmm.
No, but if I do you with just as a regular Bing, Paul Throt, you have the same thing. Your page comes
up.
So you're
talking about this knowledge graph on the right.
So there's like, you know, your Wikipedia page is listed. Your Facebook link is there. All this stuff is there.
Twit is kind of low on the page, I'm afraid.
I think they're still populating this, but that's useful because it surfaces information they think you would want to find when you look for a certain person more easily.
Yeah. They really push the radio show as, I guess that makes sense.
Got a nice link to the Delphi 3 Super Bible. That's good.
Yeah, that's important.
Nice. Isn't that good? See? Look at that. You don't get that on Google.
People who search for me also search for Mary Jo Foley, Steve Gibson, and Leo Laporte.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
This is the start page search, which is an anonymized Google search. And that has Twit very high up.
Startpage.com.
Yeah, start page is an interesting privacy story. They use the Google index, but they don't do any of the it's an anonymized Google index. And then the result, which is really nice, has a link that is you can anonymous view of that page, so it kind of does a little.
Google does the same thing. I just searched myself, and I'm getting a similar page. I don't know who did it first, but
Google does the knowledge graph. They've been doing that for ages, and they get it from Wikipedia and a variety of sources.
Yeah.
So they do that.
They pull it together, right?
They do that for as many people as they can.
I mean, but otherwise, you know. I think Bing is right in, or Microsoft's right in doing what they're doing with Bing. It's like, okay, you did it as much as you could to make this a web search engine. You couldn't catch Chrome. You're not going to catch Chrome. So do something a little different. Be an intranet search engine.
Just jam it down in their throats, whether they want it or not.
Yeah, the jamming the throat thing. It's like, okay, guys.
Then Google's going to hire a Mark Penn, and they'll have like a Bing Man ad or whatever.
Oh, man.
Well, there's an opportunity now. I think Google is more and more, people are more and more upset with Google. The mistake Microsoft will make is to make itself as annoying as Google.
Exactly.
Something just talked behind me. I don't know what that was.
It was your friend Alexa telling Francis me to stop talking.
I think it was some Google device telling me that.
Frank Shaw. Hey.
Frank Shaw, coming out of your speaker.
I'm paying attention.
You knew they were in my office.
We're getting ready for the analyst called Paul any minute now. Just
you guys are busy with the podcast, right? Okay, we're going live.
Okay, we're going live. We'll wait.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I have to say about Bing for today. That's all.
Okay.
There's still time
for them to do the right thing.
Back down. This does impact a very small slice of the Office 365 user base right now, and if you're a consumer, you don't have to worry about it. Even as a commercial customer. If you, I always forget the exact names of these things, but it's like small, I think I have what's called Business Office 365 Business Premium.
Yeah, that's what I have. I have Business.
And then there's I don't know what the lower end one is called, Basics or something, but those are not impacted. Sorry.
Really? They're not impacted?
No, this is 365 Pro Plus only.
Oh, right. That's right. So you have to have that where you download the apps, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised it's the IT and support people aren't the ones that really make
They're the ones who are really mad.
You know what? They will be when it happens.
They already are. When does it happen? Starts in mid-February.
When you're going to hear the howls. They're not paying attention. But when that starts happening, they say, what the hell?
I know.
Yep. Now, I guess the one little caveat we should mention here, too, is as an end user, if this thing is auto-deployed to your computer, you're using Chrome, they change everything, you can switch back to Google.
Yeah, of course.
As a user. You can just do it. Of course, but I mean, you know, they're not
doing something weird
to your browser.
Where?
I believe you have to do it in the extension that Microsoft is pushing to you.
Oh, really? You can't even uninstall it?
No. You have to go in there to switch your, I believe, because I was reading all
you
their steps.
You have to interact with the malware to disable the malware?
Exactly. Yep.
Just put in the last four digits of your social and everything will be fine.
Exactly. And your mother's maiden name and you're good to go.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway. Do it. So, good idea, badly executed, Microsoft.
There's still time.
Yeah, there's still time. But the clock is running.
The clock is running. Yeah, it is.
I really swear to God, I thought by now Microsoft would have said, no.
Me too. I thought they'd do it Friday at 6 p.m.
Someone higher up at Microsoft is like, wait, what are we doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, and fixed to say no. But it hasn't happened. It
hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Windows 10 time.
So we've had a couple of months off from Ad Duplex. And in fact, somebody emailed me and said, hey, what's going on with these guys? So I emailed them because I know Alan over there. And he was just taking some time off over the holidays and didn't think anyone would notice. But anyway, they're back and they have their latest Windows 10 usage share data, which I always find very interesting. And the key takeaway there is that the latest version of Windows 10, which is 1909, is now on 15% of Windows 10 PCs out in the world. 1903, which is the most popular version, is on 53.4%. And so between the two of them, where is this data? The two releases of Windows 10 that came out last year are now on over 2/3 of all the PCs running Windows 10. And so, you know, when you think about the original goal for Windows as a service and Microsoft's dream that we'll all be running, you know, the latest version, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of, you know, they're getting there. I mean, that's not horrible. So that's kind of interesting. And then they also had some related Surface usage data. I'm always fascinated by this too, because if you look like the top 10 Surface devices in use by usage, right? I think the first six are tablet form factor devices. All of them, various versions of Surface Pro, except number three, which is Surface Go, which is on over 14% of all Surfaces out in the world. In the bad news department, the Surface devices that I care about the most, like Surface Laptop, Surface Book, you know, are like way down in the list, like, unfortunately. So I think if you add up all the Surface Laptop versions, it's not even as good as like Surface 3.
Is
really
out. Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like they really just aren't out there in any appreciable numbers. And we'll see how that changes. You know, Microsoft's going to announce their earnings today. And this will be the earnings for the quarter where those new devices all came out. So remember last quarter, they released Surface Laptop 3 and Surface Pro X and Surface Pro 7. So we'll see what the we're not going to get sales numbers, but we'll see what the revenues look like. I assume it will be somewhere between 1 and 2 billion, you know, which I know is a wide range, but the higher that number is, the better, the quarter. But
it should be a good quarter because it's one where holiday sales were in it. Yep. So, yeah.
That's right. Yep.
So it's Q2 for them, right? Fiscal Q2, I think.
Q2, that's right. Yep. Yeah, fiscal quarter two, yep.
Yeah.
For what was this? We're in fiscal 2021? I guess.
It's 2021.
2021. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. Fiscal second
quarter.
Then let's see, since we last talked, there's been a new Insider build, which has absolutely nothing new in it. So let's talk about that for 15 or 20 minutes. So the weird thing there, of course, was the Insider guys announced that they're not able to bring the promised PWA to market, right? So they were making an Insider app as a PWA.
Yep, they were. Yep.
I'm not sure if they're lacking some expertise in web development or something, because I don't think what they're doing is, done with PWA.
I wasn't quite clear why they were doing a PWA other than just proof of concept of PWAs, but
this is just a little gross. I think they're just trying to do something fun and
but they're not now. So, oh well.
Yep. It does. A lot of people saw PWA in headlines and were like, oh my God, is Microsoft giving up on PWA?
No. The next one, though, I don't know if you saw this yesterday. Microsoft put out a cumulative update for 1909 and 1903 that mostly seems to fix all the problems people were having with Search and File Explorer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm only aware of it because they referred to... They referred to the feature incorrectly. They called it, what they call it, quick view or quick access.
Yeah.
Which is quick access is a view in File Explorer. It's not the search feature.
Yeah. But anyway, it's out. I guess this was in release preview for like a day. I was watching Raph on Twitter yesterday and he was like, it was in release preview for a day and now they're rolling it out to people as a non-obligatory CU. So you can take it.
Obligatory CU.
Like it doesn't, it's not forced on you, but it's kind of just out there as, if you want to download this, you can, but you don't have to. It's because it's not a security related one.
Yeah.
It's more just fixes, right?
Right.
So it's out there.
This has been a problem for a long time, I think, right? It's because it's in.
What specifically was it? Was it? I saw like some people were seeing a gray box when they were doing search.
I've never experienced it. Yeah,
me neither. I haven't either. Yeah. Anyway, it supposedly is mostly, or if not completely, fixed with this cumulative update.
And the fact that this
is that actually what it says. It's mostly, if not completely, fixed.
It was so vague. The way they worded this was really vague.
I mean, the
vague
person that wrote this didn't even know what the feature in File Explorer was called. So you have to have a little bit of skepticism here. I mean, like,
we think we found the
that's
bug.
That's alarming.
It might be fixed.
Maybe we did. Maybe we didn't.
Hey, see how this works.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does not inspire confidence.
It's non-obligatory.
Right.
That's such a great term. Non-obligatory.
No, they have another name for it. I'm not using the right word.
No, I wish that was the name. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I had to say about the CU.
See you later.
What else we got?
See you later on that.
Microsoft is going to bring Edge tab management to Chrome.
It's interesting how this has gotten a lot of news because, you know, one of the promises that Microsoft made when they adopted Chromium was that they were going to give back. And they've given back in 1,000 small ways, which we don't really see. But they've talked about things they're going to add to Chromium, like better scrolling, better touch support, more accessibility features, you know, things that they had been working on for the old Edge. And it looks like now they're going to be moving some of the tab management features from Edge back to Chromium. So Chrome and whatever other browsers use Chromium can benefit from this as well. So that's actually, it's cool.
Yeah.
It's nice. And I'm sure Google will never pull the plug on them. It's all fine. It's good.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you can submit it, then it has to be merged in. Is it merged in?
Yeah, they were submitted, I think, this was submitted. Let's see. Following.
You can submit. I mean, anybody can submit stuff. Mm. But, I mean, it's good. I'm glad Microsoft's giving back.
The way this worked was a Chromium engineer requested that Microsoft add this feature, so they sent it in.
Oh.
That's good.
Yeah.
Nice. Very nice. We like that feature. Nice. Would you mind just...
Yeah.
Come on over.
It's a cool one. It's kind of a differentiator, but could you bring it over?
They've never had, in fact, this is one reason Steve Gibson refuses to switch from Firefox. They've never had kind of good tab management. So I think maybe this is something they needed. I don't know.
It's good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, nice. A major USB. Oh, this one. I'm sitting in front of one of the affected ThinkPads.
Uh-oh.
This one was a little nerve-wracking at first because it affected so many ThinkPads, and I was thinking, my God, what if there's some endemic hardware problem?
But that's what's weird because there is a software fix. So the USB-C ports.
It's a firmware update. They screwed something up, and apparently this fixes it. But you have to install two things. One's a firmware update, one's a driver update. You have to do them in a particular order. It's way better just if you use a ThinkPad, you know they have something called Lenovo Vantage, and that's the tool you use to do driver updates. That will do that in the right order. So just use that. Make sure you're up to date, and you should be good to go. But it's a weird bug because I guess people had their computer for about a year, and then suddenly it stopped working. Mm. And it just sounds like something that could be horrible, but apparently this does fix it. So cross your fingers, hope for the best. I'm sure it's fine.
But I don't think I've seen it yet.
You would know if you saw it because it throws up crazy dialogues and you get all
only
these failures.
Only on ThinkPads.
Only yeah, think, I'll think
yeah, yeah, it's a ThinkPad. So I have a 470. Yep. I'm looking at a 470S right now, which is on the list of affected ThinkPads.
If you look at the list, it is basically every ThinkPad that's been released.
Years. Yeah,
yeah, the past 2 or 3 years.
But
yeah.
Now, maybe it's running Linux, but maybe I already have the firmware update because, whenever there are firmware updates, I apply them. Were they pushed out automatically?
I don't know how it would work. How do you do that on Linux, or do you have to go into Windows to do it?
No, the beauty part nowadays is that all those firmware updates get pushed to Linux too. So,
you should probably have it. A week or two ago.
Yeah, because I haven't seen it. I've literally seen nothing. So,
okay, I don't know how this would expose itself in Linux, but if you're running Windows, it's really obvious.
You get a firmware update as part of the Windows update.
Yeah. It's not shy about telling you this is something.
Says, you got something wrong. This is terrible. Oh, my God.
What are you doing? Did you just plug something into that? That doesn't work.
That's weird. Yeah. PremiumOutlook.com users have a problem, too. What's that story?
So if you're Outlook.com Premium or the ad-free Outlook.com subscription customer, as of February 28th this year, you no longer can use personalized email addresses unless you are also subscribing to Office 365 Home or Personal. So there are a lot of people. I don't know how many. I can't say a lot.
One.
But no, there's than one.
This is me.
Because I've heard from more than one. There's a number of people who do this. They subscribe to Outlook.com Premium or the ad-free, and they don't have an Office 365 subscription, but they have personalized email addresses that they have created because that was a benefit of Outlook.com Premium. Yep.
Yeah.
You're going to lose it. So your best option is subscribe to Office 365 Home or Personal, I guess, because then you can continue to use that feature.
Right.
How
much was Outlook Premium? I don't even remember.
I forget how much it was too. No, it wasn't all that much.
Need Office 365.
Right. And Outlook.com, I still get ads all the time. Upgrade to the premium version. But if you do upgrade to the premium version after February 28th, you will no longer get the option to get a personalized email address. That feature is going away for new subscribers.
Yep.
Just word to the wise.
I still hear from people who want to, they wanted to use this, but they don't want to use GoDaddy. And it's that's the service they're using. So it's like, do you think they're going to switch? And it's like, I think they don't want to do this. So,
they don't. They totally don't want to be in that business.
Yeah,
right. And they've been communicating that for years. Like they've been getting people off of using Microsoft as a domain registrar. Something they don't want to do.
The low-cost Office 365, the lowest-cost Office 365 commercial account type, whose name I'm butchering. I think it's called, it's not Business Basics, but whatever that is.
No, they changed the name. That's why you're...
Business Essentials.
Business Essentials, right.
$5 a month. So they do custom domains. You don't get the downloadable Office apps. You get the cloud stuff. So you get a terabyte of OneDrive for business storage, $60 a year. And you can do a custom domain.
That's what I have.
I think it's been a while since I've done this, but I think they will work with any registrar. I don't think you have to I shouldn't say, I'm not 100% sure, but I can't imagine they're locking that to a single registrar. So if that's super important to you and all you care about is like the webmail, or you can get, you obviously can get it on a mobile device or whatever, you know, maybe that's an option.
Yeah.
I just get Office 365 Home or personal.
I know. It's fairly cheap.
Yeah.
All right. You know what this means? It's time to talk about Windows 7.
Yep. You didn't think this was going away, did you?
It's never going away. Never.
Well, I thought it was funny that there's going to be another security patch to Windows 7.
Yeah. Yeah, we should get that out of the way. So if you were still running Windows 7.
Sorry. Is it technically a security patch?
No. Or is it it's a bug fix. And like that's why it's even more interesting, because there's no security flaw here.
No. But that looks like a really bad move. The people who got the final security update with Windows 7.
Don't let the door kick you on the way out.
Right? They had wallpapers that turned black. And it was like, wait, really, Microsoft? Is that like your kiss of death? Goodbye. Your wallpapers are black now. And at first, they weren't going to patch it. Remember, they were saying, if you get extended security updates, we'll fix your black wallpapers. But now they're saying they will fix it for everyone as of the next patch.
To defend Microsoft here, because as everyone knows, I am a world-class Microsoft defender.
Hell yeah. You know where your bread's buttered.
Yeah. So, by the way, we're joking about that. So
yes.
I get that feedback. The black screen thing, where the wallpaper disappears, it goes to a black screen, is one of the side effects of when your computer is not activated in Windows 7, right? So this, when you think about what's happening here, it's end of support. There's been some the little bits that are shifting are kind of the same ones where it's not activated. I'm sure that's why this happened. I don't think it was malicious on Microsoft's part.
Hopefully,
but it doesn't
not.
Matter because they are going to fix it at least. So, but this is, you know. This I've seen this kind of thing.
The only reason this is a little problematic for me is one of the things I've been saying is, well, the good news is you've had Windows 7. It's been out for 10 years. They've patched every conceivable flaw.
Except for the ones that they introduced.
Yeah.
Right?
So well, they introduced this with Patch Tuesday?
Yeah, February.
A week ago or 2 weeks ago, whenever it was, they released updates for Windows 7, and one of them gigantic full screen, you know, your computer's out of support.
Yeah.
Oh, message. I get it. And that's doing it.
Even the simplest, you know, what did you write this in, like Java or
that's
something?
The
it always comes back to Java.
Massive code base, and it's just fragile as heck. And everything affects everything else. It's the butterfly effect.
So the solution then is to open source this thing and let the community take care of it.
I love this idea. I wonder what it would end up looking like.
No, but here's why I love this. First of all,
it can't
because
there's too much proprietary license.
Right.
The Free Software Foundation is nuts. Let's get that out. Those people are insane. And one of the things you have to kind of struggle through when you read the little blog post about this is, my God, are they entitled? You know, it's like, we demand that Microsoft, it's like, guys. Just step back from the cliff for a second. Because honestly, the notion of Microsoft open sourcing Windows, despite the fact that, like Leo said, it's impossible, it's just never going to happen. This would be like a win for everybody. Like, this would totally be a win if they could ever do
it. And they don't have to go through the FSF. There's lots of ways they could do this, including put it on their own gosh darn GitHub.
Yeah.
And
they're not doing it.
No,
they're never going to do it.
They can't do it. Because of this, they have so much licensed code in there that they're not allowed to open source. Yep. They wouldn't be giving you the source code, really, the full source code.
But
plus Windows 10 is Windows 7.
They'd be giving away the keys to the kingdom.
Yeah.
They can't open source Windows 7.
When they came out with new Coke, they're not going to give away the old Coke recipe.
No, they're not.
Nobody wants this anymore. I think look. If I could just dream for a moment, I think this would be wonderful. This would solve problems. Again, it's never going to happen, but for like everybody on the stack, it would solve problems.
This, by the way, is Alex Lindsay's longstanding plea to Apple to open source OS X.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, remember in the early days, we thought there was going to be an open source version of Mac OS X.
Well, there kind of was, because Next Step became OpenStep, which was, I think, open source, or at least.
But even the Darwin stuff, right? Was essentially like an open source
version. It's a mock kernel. They wrote their own stuff on top of it. It's actually much more doable than it would be for Microsoft open source Windows. But
yeah. Well, neither,
do you remember though? A number of years ago, Mark Rusinovich said in some interview, "Yeah, maybe one day we'll open source Windows." Remember he said that?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
I
wish I could find this person's
name. And then
name,
Frank Shaw called him.
Exactly. And said, yeah,
you're going over to Azure, buddy. No. So as a reader of my site pointed out, this is very insightful. He said, Microsoft open source Windows Live Writer, which is their little blog tool from Windows Live Essentials from 10 years ago. Yep. It took them 2 years to release that thing.
Yep.
So we're not going to live long enough to see them ever open source Windows if you use that as an example. Which
just
is
to expunge all the F words in the comments took
yes,
hours.
Right. Yes. No. You know what? Honestly, leave those in.
No, those are the best
source community. Nobody would love that and would respect Microsoft more for
You'd
it.
You'd get so many links on Reddit.
Yep.
People would love it. It would be fun.
I love it when they put in source code. And you see this sometimes. I don't know what this does. I wrote this
but
a long time
ago. But
here you go. Don't touch it because you'll break it.
Exactly.
You see that a lot.
It's like we're going to discover that Windows actually compiles to P code, and that explains a lot, doesn't it?
Maybe you might be onto something.
Plus, there's got to be some ancient code in there, which would just be fascinating to find something that dates back from like the early 90s or something.
This following paragraph was written by Bill Gates. No one really knows what it does. Don't touch it.
Anything by Dave Cutler, would be full of profanity.
This everything is going to break.
He actually arranged the zeros and the ones, so from a distance it looks like a nasty message to digital or something.
I do think, though, there is a case to be made often, not probably as well as the Free Software Foundation makes it.
Yes, yes.
But there's a case to be made often that orphan software should be, and there is some precedent, this has happened from time to time, should be released to the community.
Yeah, so the problem there
is... They open source DOS, right?
Yeah, and look what we got, free DOS.
They can't open source this.
I agree.
A newer version that they're selling, right? So it's not... Right. Windows is not orphaned. This is an older... No. Now unsupported version, but I'd with the understanding it can never happen. This would be good for PC makers, good for users, good for developers, good for Microsoft.
What about hackers?
Do people hack Linux because it's open source? I mean,
yeah, that's better though. I mean, from the point of view of security, maybe initially it'd be a minefield. Hackers would go crazy and have great,
right, but then people would help.
But people
defend,
would fix it,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, I wouldn't say open source software is more vulnerable. I would say it's probably less vulnerable. It certainly gets fixed
faster. But the Linux community could come up with a PWA for the insiders.
Yeah.
I'm
just saying.
That guy.
Finally, let's before we get to the back of the book, you can't without a little Xbox love. By the way. Yeah. I got a DVD, so I rarely use DVDs. The only DVD player in the whole house is my Xbox.
I was just thinking about this.
And so I hadn't turned it on maybe in a while, a couple weeks, a month. Not one, but two multi-gigabyte updates. I think they were 500 gigabytes each.
Wow.
Lisa finally got up and left. She said, "We're not watching this DVD. This is ridiculous."
Yikes. Give me a call when the 1990s come back.
And I have set it to update in the background because I don't like it. So every time I turn on the Xbox, it says, "All right, update time. How exciting."
I just witnessed something yesterday that I'd never seen before, which was I turned the Xbox on. I turned to go do something on my computer. I looked back and the screen turned off. And I was like, what's going on there? And I looked down and the Xbox, that white circle light on the front was blinking white.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, my God, what if something's wrong with it? So I looked up, I Googled it. I binged it, right? I Googled it and I said,
come on.
White blinking light Xbox One. And it meant that it was automatically installing a system update.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well, but
in the middle of the day.
Does yours automatically install, though, really?
Yeah.
Because mine
I let it do the,
I tell it
the power management where it can come on and do stuff.
Right.
And,
I just leave it on. That's what I finally said.
Leave it alone.
Just don't ever turn off and please install your updates. And it doesn't. So I have to look at it again. So it does work.
It does work. Yes, it works at some of the most inopportune times.
I wouldn't want it to work in the middle of the day. But if it just,
Yep.
Yeah. Stop. I've never seen it do that before. To the Screen Actors Guild, my good friends, please stop sending DVDs. They sent DVDs of Netflix shows. So, you know,
that's
amazing. Every year they have the SAG Awards. I'm a member because I'm an AFTRA. Yep. And so every year, as long as my dues are paid up, I get up like a ton of discs, like 20 discs of For Your Consideration discs, including Stranger Things, The Crown, The Irishman. It's like, I don't need a disc.
In stunning 480p quality.
That's the other thing. It's 480.
People
it's a
forget.
DVD. You know, it's horrible looking.
Definition. Yeah.
And then you have to say, and it's really funny, when you first launch it, it says, all right, you have to promise that you will shred this disc after you watch it. And then you say, I promise, and then you can watch the movie.
Wow.
So if anybody wants these discs, I put them on my Plex server. I'll give you a login.
They're up on eBay right now.
Nobody does because they're 480. In fact, a number of these movies I just bought on iTunes because it's like I can't. There was one movie, The Lighthouse.
Yep.
Have you seen that?
No, but I'm.
It's wild, but it's.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, and it's 1980 by.
It's
supposed to be a 1980 by 1080, but it's shot 4x3. So you watch it. Yes, because I think they're trying to do this because you want to feel like constrained, and it works, by the way.
Interesting. So like a Stanley Kubrick kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's black and white, 4x3. Yeah. You feel like you're watching an old movie. I thought, well, there's something wrong with this. And I looked, and it's 1920 by 1080. They're just not using all of the screen.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
And then I thought, it must be the DVD they sent me. So I bought it on iTunes. It looks exactly the same. it's a wild movie. Willem Dafoe is just amazing in it. He's a sea captain. Arr, aye, man. The guy says, yes, sir. He says, say aye, sir. Anyway, I'm sorry. Xbox, Paul, please take
it over. That's so uninteresting compared to that last topic.
Aye, sir.
We only have one minor Xbox note. February 1st is coming up. When's February 1st? Probably Saturday or Sunday. So Microsoft has released the list of games that are coming out for those people who have Xbox Live Gold accounts through their Games with Gold program. So TT, Isle of Man, call it, how do you say that? Cthulhu?
Cthulhu.
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 It's like a Barcelonan word. Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Fable Heroes. And the most interesting one is the original Xbox version, not Xbox 360. But the original Xbox version of Star Wars Battlefront, so the first Battlefront.
That was a good game.
Yeah.
I like that.
It doesn't have online play anymore, unfortunately, because it's like 2,000 years old. But
that's the whole point
you'll be able to play it on your Xbox One X. Mm-hmm. Starting February
16th.
Nice.
Pretty cool.
Nice, Cthulhu. Cthulhu. How do you say it?
I think Cthulhu, right, Mary Jo?
Cthulhu?
Isn't it a...
I always wondered how you pronounce that.
Isn't it an H.P. Lovecraft?
Yes, it is.
Character Cthulhu.
I believe it's H.P. Lovecraft, Leo.
The Call of Cthulhu, published in Weird Tales in 1928 by H.P. Lovecraft.
H.P. Lovecraft.
H.P. You know, it's funny, even Wikipedia doesn't have a pronunciation. Normally. Etymology, spelling, and pronunciation. They actually have a whole paragraph.
Oh, good. Of course they do. And?
It's Cthulhu. According to Karsten,
Cthulhu.
Lovecraft transcribed the pronunciation of Cthulhu as K-H-L-U-L-H-L-O-O. It's said that the first syllable is pronounced gutturally and very thickly. I'm sorry, I put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. Cthulhu.
When I read The Lord of the Rings, all of the, when I was like in the sixth grade, a million years ago, all of the sea names like Cirith Ungol are hard C's, but of course I read them as S sound C's, like Cirith Ungol. Mm-hmm. And then you find out years later that you pronounced it wrong and it's in your head. Exactly. You can't ever get it out.
You can never change it. No.
Yeah. So this is like that. It's like Cthulhu.
I've always said Cthulhu. Cthulhu. And I'm Cthulhu. So glad that the Harvard boy has corrected me.
You've heard of the Sword of Shannara?
Yeah.
Right. So I met the author of that book and he told me that it was pronounced Shannara. And I said, no, it's not. And I'm not pronouncing it that way. It's like,
I pronounce Sha-na-na.
Yep, Sha-na-ra.
Sha-na-ra.
And I'm like, yep, that's not happening.
Wow. Cthulhu.
Cthulhu.
Cthulhu. Ladies and gentlemen, the back of the book is up next. But first, a word from our sponsor, the fine folks at Fresh Books. And I say fine because they saved my bacon many moons ago. This is when I was going up to Canada to do Call for Help, and I had to send an invoice every month in Canadian dollars, not just an invoice for my time. I also had to bill them for the airfare and the hotel, and man, it was such a pain to go get the receipts and all that stuff, staple them to the invoice, fire up Microsoft Word, fire up Excel too, because I got to convert it to Canadian dollar. It got to be such a pain, I stopped invoicing. At which point I learned such a valuable lesson that if you don't send invoices, you don't get paid. And I finally sent like 6 months of invoices, and the bookkeeper yelled at me. She said, if you ever do this again, you're not going to ever – we're never going to pay you again. You can't – you have to send it every month. So I was bemoaning my fate when Amber MacArthur told me about these guys, Fresh Books. They're up in Toronto. This is how long ago this was. They were a Web 2.0 startup. Now, of course, they're a SaaS startup. They are the number one accounting software in the cloud. FreshBooks, because it's online, is always giving you more and more tools. For instance, now you have the ability to invite contractors, employees, and business partners to manage projects. You can give access to select individuals. You can improve your project management workflow. Of course, one of the clear advantages of FreshBooks is the knowledge day-to-day you'll have about what's going on, time-tracked budgets, deadlines. You even know if you're making money or not, which is something a lot of freelancers don't find out till tax time. You can assign project due dates. You can overview project status. You can track your team's expenses. And this, by the way, the expenses all with the FreshBooks app. You take a picture, it goes in the invoice, it goes in the bookkeeping. You can even set up FreshBooks to automatically call your bank every day and get the latest expenses. It just makes it so much easier to know what's going on. Invite staff, client, or contractors for a project, assign rates or hours. You can have different rates for the same client but for different projects, which happens all the time, right? Try that in a lot of these other systems. Time entry report will give accurate job and project status to your client. You've got complete permissions, by the way, so you can set who can see what, who can change what. The mobile app does it all, so you're never offline. And you can even ask them if there's a problem because they have the best customer service. Nice people there in Toronto, right? Phone, email, live chat, somebody who always is there and has your company's back. Running business can happen all in one place, streamlining the effectiveness of your team to help you get the job done. 24 million people worldwide have used FreshBooks. I might have been the first. I was not the last. Maximize your business's workflow with FreshBooks. All you have to do is go to FreshBooks.com/Windows. And if you do us a favor, let them know you heard about it on Windows Weekly. When they say, how did you hear about us? Just type in Windows Weekly in that box there. And you will get 30 days free to try it. I think you'll like it. FreshBooks.com/Windows. And don't forget to tell them you heard it on Windows Weekly. Thank you, FreshBooks, for supporting the show. Now, let's go to Paul and his tip of the week. Oh, I have to turn on his mic of the week, too. Go ahead.
What happened?
Oh, I had your mic off. Tip of the week.
I was laughing during your promo.
Yeah, I don't let you laugh during the ads.
I laugh when you said if you don't invoice someone, you're not going to get paid.
It's true.
Yes, I've experienced that.
Yes. Every freelancer
turns out. Yeah, it turns out you have to ask for the money.
Silly, isn't it?
Then they turn me off. So my tip is actually a tip for me. It's kind of self-serving. But for the past 3 months, I've been working on this Notepad clone, which I've called .NET Pad because it's created with the .NET framework and Windows Forms and Visual Basic. And it's actually kind of done, although I've been working on like a C# version and also a version with WPF, which is the Windows Presentation Foundation, just to sort of see what that looks like.
No programming project is ever really done.
I know. I could obsess over this and literally spend the next year working on Notepad for some reason, but I've decided I should probably move on. So I'd like to move on to something that is C# based, WPF, and maybe even .NET Core. But I'm looking for some ideas from listeners or readers about maybe the type of project it could be. I'd like it not to take as much time as I spent on Notepad. So, you know, it could be, you got to remember too, sorry, I should say WPF was the framework that shipped with Windows Vista, right? Which was Longhorn, mm-hmm. which was, and it was called Avalon originally, if you're familiar with the Longhorn stuff. The point of it was to allow for on the desktop, this is before we had store apps, but to allow for those kind of, you know, animations, 3D graphics, and dynamic layouts, you know, kind of content-based apps and things. So if you think about stuff like the news app in Windows 10 or the weather app, those are kind of the type of thing. I mean, those are more modern versions, but those types of experiences. So anyway, if anyone has any idea for something that won't completely obliterate the next 6 months of my life, I'm just looking for some ideas.
I have an idea.
Notepad editor, maybe. yes.
That was her idea.
No. My idea is, what about making a blocker for that extension for Office 365?
That's what Steve Gibson would do. That's what Steve Gibson would do, yeah.
Like a, you're right, like a navigation app that for some reason blocks the...
Yeah. And it deflects right. the extension.
He'd call it something like the Never Bing thing. He'd have a clever...
Never name. Bing.
Never Bing. Yeah.
Bingsins.com.
De-Bingify.
Okay. Anyway, I'll just throw that up. And I have an article up about this. I kind of... whatever. Anyway, I've been doing a lot
with
this
game?
Stuff.
What about a game?
I'm going to do a game eventually. That will happen, but not for this one.
Call of Duty cat. cat
just a cat for Call of Duty. Yeah.
Right.
He's thinking about it. Look at him. He's thinking.
I'll get there. I will get there. A game will happen. That will be eventually. But I want to work through the Microsoft frameworks first. And I'm kind of doing them in order, so WPF and then UWP and probably Xamarin and probably Blazor and, you know, we'll...
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Power apps, whatever.
Yeah, so. become an expert in the Microsoft platforms.
Yeah, eventually I'll get to something that happened in the past decade, you know, but I'll get there. I think WPF will be a nice launching point for the newer stuff because it uses XAML and...
Nice.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the app pick of the week is something we already talked about. But again, I can't stress this enough. I think anyone listening to this podcast is both capable of doing this and probably has an interest in it. Look this up, the Surface Duo emulator. It does require you to install Android Studio on your computer, which is terrible, but you don't have to use it. And you can check out what Microsoft thinks is going to be the future of at least some computing.
That's what you should write. You should write a Duo app.
I am. Mm-hmm. Yep, that will be. But you know, again, in the scope of things, I mean, honestly, it's going to be a while before I can get to that. But yeah, I'm definitely looking at it.
You miss programming. You like doing it, don't you?
It has. You know, I've always played around with it. Yeah, like I've always have. But I think the thing that's been nice about this project is it forced me to stick with one thing and actually kind of see it through.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would just kind of screw around with stuff
too.
And then
I
would do little bits, little small things, and then kind of forget about it. And so this has really focused me in a nice way.
Yeah, like, I used to write full programs, and now I just do like
the,
it's like writing little ditties.
Yeah. I've always done little things. I've gone part way, you know, with certain things, but this has been nice. So I want to do other things like this, I guess.
How about an enterprise pick of the week from Mary Jo Foley? What do you think?
Okay. First enterprise pick is about Dynamics 365. If you're a customer of those products and services, you should know that as of this week, you can start checking out the, quote, hundreds of new features coming to Dynamics 365 and the Power Platform between February and September this year. This is how they do it in the Dynamics world. They publish wave one, then they publish wave two, and they list all the features coming for all the different modules in Dynamics 365 all at once. Usually they add a few more once they publish the initial list, but what was different this time compared to how they've done this in the past is in the past they gave us a single PDF that was usually over 100 pages, but it was easy to kind of look through that and see all the new features. Maybe the PDF wasn't ready yet. I'm not sure, but This time we have to go through the Microsoft Docs pages and look at each product separately to see the list of the new features. They say there is going to be a PDF out by the end of this week, a single one. But if you really want to know right now, you can go into the links. I've got some of the links in my blog, and Microsoft's published them, where you can see here's what's coming for sales, here's what's coming for marketing, here's what's coming for finance, here's what's coming for Power Apps, Power Automate. I would say looking through the list, I looked kind of briefly through. There's nothing that jumped out at me as some gigantic major new feature. Instead, I'd say they're mostly incremental features. There's more AI type insights features coming across the board. There's a lot of things like making this easier to automate, making this work more cleanly and concisely when integrating these two products. It's that kind of stuff. But still, you know, if you're a Dynamics customer, I'm sure there are things in there that you would care about. So it's worth checking those out.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you have a second pick.
I do. So I don't use the word apocalypse usually in my headlines. Maybe I should use that more.
We leave that to Paul.
But Kevin Beaumont, Gossy the Dog on Twitter, said, get ready for the potential LDAP signing apocalypse coming in March. So he put a blog post out talking about how in March, Microsoft is going to change the way LDAP handles signing. LDAP is the lightweight Active Directory protocol, and Microsoft is changing the way it does signing with that to make it more secure. The result of this, though, is a number of apps that touch on LDAP and use LDAP channel binding are going to break. They're warning people, like, this change is going to break a lot of apps. So if you're an admin, you need to go and look up Microsoft's guidance around this LDAP channel binding that's coming in March, because they're going to push this update and things are going to break. So it's better if you check your apps now and make sure they're all set. This affects everything that uses things like Windows Server 2008 up to Windows 10. I mean, there's a lot of things that this affects. So it's good to get in there and check if you have something that may be affected and head it off at the pass.
Does the A in LDAP stand for apocalypse?
Yes, I think it does. It does now. I was asking another friend of mine who covers security about this, and he said, you know, it is big, but not everybody is going to be affected. I'm not sure how many people are. And, you know, if you're somebody who lives in that world around Active Directory networking, you probably think this is really amazingly gigantic and everybody's going to be affected, right? But, right. I mean, Kevin Beaumont doesn't usually put out the alarm unless it's something likely to be a big deal, in my experience.
So you would think anybody using LDAP would know ahead.
You would think. And I'm sure Microsoft has sent out warnings. But you know what? People don't always heed these warnings. Just like the Bing thing. Like, Microsoft has warned people.
Microsoft
this is
should add some LDAP improvements to a browser extension.
Yeah. And push it to people forcibly.
Just a thought. Yeah.
Anyway, something to be aware of. I'm not going to say alarmed yet, but March isn't that far away, and that's when this is going to hit.
I am ready to talk beer, Mary Jo. Let's do it.
Let's do it. It's been a while, maybe a week or two, since I've talked about Imperial Stouts, but it's winter, so you talk a lot about them during the winter. And Perennial makes an excellent one called Abraxas. Abraxas is an Imperial Stout that's made with cinnamon sticks, vanilla, cacao nibs, and chilies.
Wow.
And it's kind of like
the
mole
of bottled beers.
Yes, that's a perfect description of this. It's roasty like an Imperial Stout, but then has all these sweet things added. So I just had the 2019 version recently, and I thought it was a little on the sweeter side. I wished it had a little more chili, but it's so good. Who cares? It's 12%. It's a dessert in a glass. It's worth the splurge. You should try it. Perennial Abraxas.
Perennial Abraxas.
I think I had that in my knee last year.
Fortunately, it's an arthroscopic procedure.
Yeah.
It is.
Microsoft earnings just happened. Put people.
Okay.
All right.
Revenue was $36.9 billion.
Sounds big.
Is that good?
Great quarter,
by
guys.
By the way, Surface was basically $2 billion, $1.976.
Wow. That's great.
Yep.
Stock is up more than $3. That's usually a sign they beat the street.
Yep.
Surface revenue was up 6%. Windows OEM revenue was up 18%.
Wow.
26% in Pro.
Is the holiday quarter a big quarter traditionally for Microsoft? Or
yeah.
It is for Apple. It's like a... Not as much as it is.
Like Apple is off the charts.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's usually high because it's like if you have new Surface devices, they will sell more of those. But it's not like their Q4 when, you know, they're closing the quarter and their salespeople are out there really selling. That's usually their big one.
Right. Well, the call's coming up in about a little more than an hour, a little less than an hour.
Yep.
I will let you two get to it, even though you will be muted during the call.
Right. Yep.
Can you just snort with laughter at any point? Or
I often do.
I hear you snorting, Paul.
I have a bottle of whiskey I bring, and every time he says Windows, I take a drink, and the whole bottle's still there when he's done.
I was going to say that you're good.
any big write-offs? Any negatives at all?
I haven't. Look, I have to look at it. I'm just saying.
Right. We'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah. Paul Thurrott, Thurrott.com, Thurrott.com. His books are at leanpub.com. Don't forget that Windows, Field Guide to Windows 10, which is an awesome volume, constantly updated illustrations available in the posters that are so cool. Leanpub.com. Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. Together, they form the two-headed duo we know as Cthulhu.
Beelzebub.
Exactly. Actually, I'm looking now, by the way, and apparently Lovecraft himself pronounced it Cthulhu. 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 There was no.
I never trust the author. That's what I.
Yeah, K H L U L H L O O. There was no. There was no th. The CTH is just a ch. Ch. Hulu. Hulu. It's from the Greek, they believe, chthonic, which means subterranean. Chthonic.
No Tolkien. That's all I'm saying.
It's no Tolkien. Cthulhu. Hulu. Hulu. Maybe that's why they named it Hulu.
That could be it.
Could be.
I don't think so.
Well, it's definitely why they named it Quibi. I have no doubt.
Yes. Yeah. Call of Quibi.
Call of Quibi. Ladies and gentlemen, we do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1800 UTC. If you'd like to watch or listen live, streams have been provided for your delectation at twit.tv/live. On-demand versions of the show, nicely packaged up and coated with a non-stick coating, are available at twit.tv/ww. Well, you wouldn't want it to stick to your pod player. twit.tv/ww. If you download from there, that's nice. You can get on YouTube. That's nice. But the best thing you could do is subscribe. That way you don't even have to think about it. It just appears every week. We're trying really hard to get Joe Rogan's 190 million downloads a month. Which means every man, woman, and child in America listens at least monthly to the Joe Rogan show. What's the population of America now? 300 million? Something like that.
Oh, it's good. No, it's like 350 plus, isn't it?
God, I remember when it was 200 back in the day.
Yeah. It was so, the traffic was wonderful back then, wasn't it?
It was so, you'd pull right up out front. You could just leave the car running and hop out. Exactly. And be there when you got out of work.
No problems.
Yeah, no problem. Let's break for a spell so you guys can go do your work, and we'll see you back next time right here on Windows.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.